Moolala is brought to you by the nonprofit credit counseling agency, Credit Canada. How much is enough? How much is enough? Certainly, when it comes to money, the answer is different by individual. No one would have the exact same answer. But I think what is similar is that even if you hit that number, you may still not be satisfied with whatever your enough is. Manisha Thakur has worked in financial services for over 30 years. She is the founder of Money Zen, and we have had her on this program many times in the past. She has a new book. It is called Money Zen, The Secret to Finding Your Enough. And she's here to talk about tips for living a rich life that satisfies both your financial health and your, as she calls it, your emotional wealth. Manisha, great to see you today.
Always great to be with you, Bruce.
And I love that you're joining us on video from your place in Maine. And to our listeners out there who can't see the shot, she did show me the ocean out the window. So she's facing me and paying attention to me, but really there is this vast and glorious ocean beyond. I want to start with this, the culture in which we live. I think this is critical context here. For so many people, in fact, I think it's fair to say the majority of people, we live in the world of there is never enough. Can you talk a bit more about that, about the world that we live in?
There's a famous quote by John D. Rockefeller where he's reputed to have said in response to a reporter who asked him how much is enough money. And he said, just a little bit more. And that really sums up what the messages are that are bombarding us these days. I meet so many people who feel no matter how much they earn, how many accomplishments they achieve, how much praise they receive, it's never enough. And they feel that they are never enough. And the reason is because the finish line keeps moving forward for a variety of reasons, but two of which are cultural norms and societal influences.
You have done in your past all the right things. You went to a great college, you did a Harvard MBA, you had the right job, you did all the things. What was, and I'm going to ask you to see if there's a crystallizing insight, but what was it that opened your world into this even being a question? Because for so many people who walked exactly your path, it's never even a thought on their mind.
What happened was I got very sick. I had to take a medical leave of absence that lasted 9 months. I literally, in this period, was able to stay awake about 5 to 6 hours a day. That's how ill I was. And so that makes you think a little bit about life. And as I came back to work, I was doing a prospective client meeting and the client didn't feel comfortable sharing her exact numbers. So we ran an analysis on my personal finances, which I've done 1,001 times myself. But as we did it in front of her and I listened to somebody else describe it, and I realized I had reached enough for what I needed in life, not private plane enough, but enough to cover what made me happy, which I realized while being very sick, was less than I would have thought before getting sick. And at the same time, I realized I was emotionally bankrupt. And I realized that financial health had come at the expense of my emotional wealth. And I wanted to understand, how did I get here? How do I get out?
Yeah. That is an insight that I think will resonate with so many of our listeners here, especially those who, like you, have been very success oriented from a very young age in a very traditional way. So on the get out, what are some things that are on that path for people to reframe expectations, for them to alter how they think and how they behave?
Well, the first overarching thing is to know that studies show that there is a number, it's different for all of us, but there is a number of financial health, the point at which we're able to meet our basic needs and desires, not just the raw needs, with comfort and ease. We've got emergency funds set aside. We have a game plan for what we're setting aside for the future. Once we hit that point, earning more money above and beyond that will not increase our financial satisfaction if it is not done on a base of emotional well-being. And so that's the first thing to know. You can keep chasing as fast as you want, but once you cross over financial health, it's not going to make you happier. So before we even get to how do we get out, I wanted to just tee that up. Have you seen that, Bruce?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. And it segues to something. You have a chapter called Hardwired to Hustle, which I love the alliteration. I love the idea is you're clearly not living if you're not out there working it, moving it, shaking it, and baking it.
That is true. And that brings us to step number one of getting out. So many of us end up on this path of becoming a human doing instead of living life as a human being because of what I call small T traumas, things that happened to us before the age of 25 that on the surface seem like, you know, when you're an adult and you look back like, oh my God, how could that still be bugging me? In my case, I was teased mercilessly between the fourth, fifth, sixth grade period. I was so ostracized and I sought solace in academics and my teachers because they were the only ones who accepted me. And then I moved into the real world and what replaced grades and teachers, but money and promotions. And so in order to let go of that hustle culture, one of the key things I had to do was dive back and understand what in my past it was that had caused me to use constant striving to heal, to cover up a wound that may now be long healed.
There is an expression about, what is it? The task takes the time allotted, or nature abhors a vacuum, sort of similar world here. As one dials down that hustle, they have the insight, they say, I'm dialing that down. How do you ensure that that insight can live with you for a period of time when you aren't running at 100 kilometers/miles, because you're in the US, per hour?
Well, the next two steps in this process help you live with that, because the next two steps out are understanding the cultural norms and the societal influences that push us in this way. And very briefly, the cultural norms I'm referring to are, you know, you meet someone, what do they ask you within three questions? What do you do? And then they make a judgment about you and you judge them. And you know, so we've gone from jobs to careers to callings. And we, as Derek Thompson from The Atlantic says, we worship at the altar of workism. So we define ourselves by work. And then we are exposed to what I call counterfeit financial culture, which are images that we see in the media that are just mathematically unrealistic. In other words, a police person living in a home that even a junior partner, an exclusive law firm couldn't afford, this sort of thing. And so when you combine that together, it makes you feel I'm not keeping up with people. If they can do it, then I should be able to do it. And so I do it, but I do it on credit. And so as you're, you know, dealing with childhood traumas, thinking about cultural norms, thinking about societal influences, if we have time, we can talk about evolutionary biology. But understanding that the way out is first through those pieces. And then there's a second step and a third step to get out.
Okay, I'm ready. Go.
All right. Step number two is to understand that as a result of those initial forces, many of us develop an equation in our head that we live to optimize that is toxic and leads to unhealthy beliefs and behaviors. It, for example, in my case, I came to believe my self-worth equaled my net worth. Yoga instructor I interviewed, self-worth equals number of students in my class and number of privates I have. Professor, self-worth equals number of papers I publish and how many times they're cited. So you want to identify what's on the other side. What's the question mark? Self-worth equals. And then step three, you want to shed that and replace it with a new mindset that you're going to use as your North Star to guide how you spend your scarce resources of time and money. And that equation is financial health plus emotional wealth equals what I call money zen, the state where you have calm and confidence and clarity about both the relationship you have with money and the role it plays in your life.
What I love about the equation as a metaphor is that you're talking about it as an act of creation. Because when we think of 2 + 2 = 4, there's no one made that up. Like, that is an is. That is universally true. Everybody agrees on that. But the equations that you're talking about, to another listener, they would say to that yoga instructor, what? Or the professor, what? How does that equation make any sense? But to the holder of that equation, it is as true as 2 + 2 = 4.
Precisely. And so that's why by shifting over to X equals Y, which is so black and white, financial health plus emotional wealth is flexible. As you go through your life, each of those definitions will shift for you. There are seasons in your life where you'll focus heavily on increasing your financial health. Then there are other seasons where you will focus more heavily on investing in your emotional wealth. And there will be times where you're asset allocation between your investment in each of those is more like 50-50. But the key is, just like you rarely want to have 100% of all of your money in stocks or all of your money in bonds, unless you are making conscious decisions about how you are splitting your focus in those areas, it is really easy to end up in a balance that does not result in a state of happiness around your relationship and role of money in your life.
I can anticipate one criticism that a listener might have of our conversation, and it is this. We are really talking about the top of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, like self-actualization and life's purpose and emotional health and all that. For many humans on this planet, for many listeners of this show, they're at the bottom of Maslow's. They're talking about security, food, roof over their head. How can you reapply the money zen approach to people for whom it is a battle just to pay the rent?
Yeah, I address this in the book directly, because this book is geared towards the two-thirds of mankind who are at least earning enough to cover Maslow's bottom hierarchy of needs. A third of people are just never going to get there, and it's horrible. There aren't social safety nets, they're not paid fairly, and this book is not a drive. That's a whole separate book that I should write. The thing is about this book is I didn't say this is for the top 1%. I said it's for the top two-thirds. And that's because many of us, in defining the bottom of Maslow's hierarchy of the needs, what we think we have to have is not really what we have to have. For example, like a certain kind of house. Well, you know what? My cabin is 550 square feet. And let me just tell you, I feel like a princess living in this, you know? And so I never thought I would want to live in a 550 square foot cabin that didn't have a washing machine and a dryer. I literally wash my clothes by my hands and hang it up outside. And so what I have come to see is that many of us are leaking money. We're spending money in areas of our life to keep up with other people or because we think we should. And we don't even really question it, whether it's having a home that has more bathrooms than humans because your kids have gone off to college, or it's dressing in a certain way that is to impress other people, but left to your own devices is not how you would groom. So that's why the equation can flex. And what I find is, even if you are in that top, let's say 10%, people up there are leaking buckets of money too. And when they do this process, oftentimes they're able to redirect a lot of that towards charitable giving, towards community. So this is a very flexible framework if you are earning a living wage.
I really, really appreciate your time, Manisha, and your insight. It is always such a pleasure to talk to you. And I think this new book prompts some tough, thoughtful, and really, really helpful questions for people. So thank you for taking the time to join us today.
My pleasure. And if listeners are wondering if they suffer from this problem, just go to moneyzenquiz.com. Take the quiz. It'll let you know.
moneyzenquiz.com. It will let you know. Thank you for letting us know, Manisha. We appreciate it.
Take care, Bruce.
Manisha Thakur is the author of Money Zen, The Secret to Finding Your Enough. Kind of a helpful question for you to answer.
Hi, it's me, your dad. Look, we need to talk. This isn't working. The missed payments, the collection calls, and all those sleepless nights. We need nonprofit debt counseling, and I found the perfect place. Credit Canada Debt Solutions. They're non-judgmental, 100% confidential. They'll negotiate with creditors and even stop interest. Don't you want to rebuild your credit? You deserve better.
Break up with debt. Visit creditcanada.com.